I's the pie that builds the boat, and I's the pie that sails her. I's the pie that catches the fish and takes them home to Lizer.
That's Schooner Fare right there, piping in boat talk for this month. That Schooner Fare has a special connection that we'll be getting to a little bit later. But boat talk is usually a call-in show, but unfortunately both phone lines will be tied up today. So if you'd like to make any questions or comments to boat talk, you'll have to, or please do use email. Just go to boattalk@gmail.com, boattalk@gmail.com, and we'll read your emails and get to the anything that you'd like to talk about that way. Going to start out, though, I believe, with John Johansson, who is down south now in Massachusetts, I believe, getting ready to deliver some stories down there. But we'll let John start out with the boatyard report. Oh, before that, though, are you there now, John?
I'm here.
Okay, you're there. I guess we probably should start out with the bad news.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I got a call on Sunday.
Ooh, John, you're in the wind.
Okay. Oh, hold on. I'll close my windows, but it'll get hot in here. How's that?
Okay, that's much better.
Okay. Yeah, I got a call on Sunday that Giffey Full had passed away on Saturday, which was real sad news. Not surprising. I think he was 95 or 96.
Yes.
He may have actually been older. And he had a great life. Bill, who is his son, called me last night. We had a long talk, maybe for an hour. And he's using some of the stuff because I did a lot of interviews with Giffey. So he's pulling some stuff off that and other personal stuff that, you know, that most of us don't know because, you know, he grew up in Marblehead. So that would have been in the 30s. All the way up to the 40s. And then he went to work on yachts. And then what was it? Probably in the 60s, 70s, he became a surveyor and probably became one of the most noted surveyors in the country.
Well, yeah, you got to be pretty good to survey the old Ironsides, which he did.
My best story was Can Garter, which is the steam yacht that you see sitting outside of Front Street Shipyard right now. It's undercover, but you can still see her black hull or some of it. And because she was up in Rochester, New York, and he went up and surveyed her and told the guy, never, don't you dare buy this boat, it will bankrupt you. Well, the guy did. And guess what? It did.
Yeah.
You know? That's a great story that, you know, how he actually learned how to survey ships because he talked to an old ship surveyor.
Right. Well, we have lots of great Giffey stories. I do, too. So I think between you, me, and Giffey's son, we can put together a pretty good show for next month around Giffey.
Oh, yeah. Yep, we can do that.
Okay. So let's move on to the boatyard report.
Yeah, I'm here in Salisbury. Actually, I've gone over the border. I've been in Massachusetts, went through Crocker's Boatyard, and everybody's just in the same kind of boat, trying to get everything done, as you know, Alan, having worked in I don't know how many boatyards and gone through springs where, you know, push comes to shove.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And basically, they go out with hopefully everything done. But anyways... I stopped at some very unique places this time, and ones we normally cover anyways. Peter Buxton is the one of the biggest ones that I did this last month because he's nearing completion on the 33-footer that he's been building. Now, this is a wooden boat, so he started building her last August. Basically, he started gathering the wood last August, and then in September, he started putting it together. The keel is about 5 inches in thickness. The planking is cedar, and that is 1 1/8. And then the frames are 2 1/4 inch white oak. And during the fall and probably most of the winter, they finished up the hull. and then they started, they put the deck in for the washboards and foredeck and after deck, and then they put in the framing for the platform. And Peter Buxton's been working with Tim Clark, and some of you may know Tim because he had a lot to do with the schooners. And he really wanted to be in on this project because he had never worked on a lobster boat like this. So he had a great time doing this. And we'll talk a little bit more about Tim in a little while here. Basically, this is a day boat. She's going to a Port Clyde owner. She was originally designed years ago. It comes off an older model. And Tad Roberts, who used to work for Bruce King, actually helped Peter Cass design this boat. Peter had carved out a model that he liked. Tad did the drawings of it, cleaned it up, but he works now on the West Coast, and if you follow Facebook, he's on Facebook and he's posting all the time, and some of his stuff's real interesting because it even goes into the West Coast stuff. I'm not sure if he's the one that posted something on Bill Page the other day, because Bill Page has gone out to the West Coast and bought a little, basically a Northwest Coast fishing trawler, whatever you want to call it, for cruising. I don't know if his other boat that he built, probably, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, might be longer, might be shorter, I don't know. Years run together. But anyways, he went out there and bought a boat, and I guess he's going to have it shipped back. So that'll be interesting to see. So right now, when that design, he went to actually Will Sturdy, who works at Brooklyn Boatyard. And Will Sturdy changed the design because this is the original boat was for cruising. This boat is just a day boat. Down forward, there is basically just a bunk. That's it, a V-berth. And then underneath the deck is absolutely nothing. She carries a minimal amount of fuel, and there'll be a box on the after deck for seating and holding your life preservers and safety gear and that sort of stuff. But other than that, she's a very, very Spartan boat. Presently, what Peter's doing is he's putting the house on. The trunk cabin was done. He's now framing up the shelter top and putting on the top. Then he could order the windows and... let's see. And then I asked him when it was going to be done, and in typical boat builder fashion, said the day after it's done. That's when we're going to launch it. So he figures, and I gave him I told him that somebody told me when I first started covering the coast, do it in seasons because it gives me 3 months. That was Doug Beebe, who used to work at Renaissance Yacht Yard down in Thomaston. So he always liked using seasons. So for Peter, we're going to do summer, sometime this summer, probably midsummer, you know, maybe in another month, depending on how everything goes, because everybody knows that the final details, that's what takes all the time. And then I asked him what was up next, and he said, going south. And so I then got him to actually say that he, several years ago, probably three, went south and went as far as Key Largo with his boat. He's got a Northern Bay 36 that he finished off back in the early 2000s for a customer out of Connecticut. And he passed away. They tried to sell the boat. And anyways, Peter ended up with the boat because he was looking for a nice cruising boat. The boat had been well maintained. And so he picked her up and he's been cruising with her all around. You'll probably see her in Penobscot Bay. And I can't remember what he calls it because his wife's name's Susan. So it's Susan something. So, but anyways, Blue Hull, nice cruising boat, Flybridge. So he's actually thinking of doing another trek and heading south and going hopefully all the way into the Bahamas. But of course, that's weather dependent. But he needs to make sure that things are lined up a little better. You know, with everything at home, because his wife runs a seafood business and she caters to the high-end restaurants all around the country. Then getting back to Tim Clark, Tim has taken over the project of the oyster sloop that Peter had rebuilt. Now, the owner had only done a little bit here and there, would actually tell Peter, okay, you can do X this year. And some years they didn't do anything on it, and basically it's outside right now and covered. She's down to the final details, basically rigging her, some details on the hull. I think the interior's all in. But anyways, Tim Clark's going to take that project over because, you know, he plays with schooners all the time. And David Stimson, I don't know how many of you remember him, but he, I don't know if he's in Newcastle or in Edgecombe, but he's in between there. If you go the old river road, which goes between Newcastle and Booth Bay, he's on that. He used to live on that route, and I think he still does. But anyways, he's going to help with the rigging drawings. They do have the drawings for Nelly, but this is the Nelly H. But the both of boats are very, very similar, but not quite identical. So, and then there's some people that have actually asked Peter to do some small jobs, which he thinks he can fit in even if he goes south. Bruce Farron was another shop I stopped into. Bruce is got a 38 Westmac that he built for Central Maine Power 14 years ago. She came in and they repowered her. They removed the John Deere 500 and put in a brand new John Deere 550. It's the same block, just goosed up a little bit. And then they spruced her up. 14 years as an actual commercial boat, not a working lobster boat, but, you know, working out and bringing out items that they need on the islands. So, you know, they can get torn up a little bit here and there. But anyways, and that one should go out the middle of this month. The other boat they've got into the next bay is a 42-foot patrol boat for the Marine Patrol, and she, I believe, is a Calvin hull. And she has just a queen-size berth down below, but it's not for sleeping on board. Basically, that's for rescue, and if they need to put, you know, somebody down below that's, you know, needs a berth, they can do that. They also have the ability to haul because it's a split wheelhouse with a pog hauler, steering station inside the split wheelhouse. And that boat's going together, and they figure that that boat will go over sometime in the probably the end of summer. She's got an 800 horsepower man V8, and she carries 400 gallons of fuel. And then after these two, he's got a 40-foot Young Brothers hull that has been at another shop, but it hasn't been finished, and the owner has decided to move it to Farron's Boat Shop to be completed. And they're not sure but what state she's in, but she'll be finished off as a cruiser sport boat, and when done, she'll go to the Caribbean. And then they've got a Northern Bay 38, that was finished off by Chislett Boat Company, who's in Dover, New Hampshire. And that means that they lengthened the original hull 2 feet because he has the original Northern Bay hull, the 36-footer. And she's being finished out as a sport fisherman. And she will be coming down here to Ipswich, Massachusetts. And that those two boats probably won't be finished off until next summer. And then beyond that, they may have a 36 Wayne Beale or a 38 Calvin to finish off for a local fisherman. But he has yet to decide on which hull he's going to do. Other than that, we moved on to John's Bay Boat Company. John's Bay Boat Company, I can't remember. We didn't get into it. We may have talked about it a little bit. But he just launched a 44 by 14 1 wooden boat, because that's all he builds down there, based on a hull that he did that John Williams owns called the Christie Michelle, which is a 44 by 14. He liked this model because it was thinner and it actually pushed through the water pretty sweet. You could save a number of gallons of fuel every hour, because she was easy to push. This boat's called Vigilant. She was finished off for a guy who lives in Westport, Massachusetts, and also has a place in Friendship, Maine. They deepened her a little bit. That's really the only change in her. And they did that so they could swing a 36-foot wheel. Now, you want to talk about appointed. Even Peter's lobster boats are well appointed. This one is really well appointed. It's a full-blown cruiser. It's got a forward cabin with a big V-berth and storage underneath it. It up in the main cabin, there's a double bunk and a bunch more storage. And then on the starboard side, there's a head with shower. And up in the shelter, they've got a settee, and to port is the the settee's to port and the galley's to starboard. Really nice boat, well finished out, a lot of teak, a lot of varnished mahogany. So long as you like varnishing a lot, you'd love the boat. Then he's got another boat to do. Oh, that boat that was is powered with an 800 horsepower man. And so she pushes through the water really, really well. I can't remember what he said that she did. But they were really happy with her performance, and they were really happy with the fact that she didn't burn a lot of fuel. Sorry, I had to start the truck again.
We have Dave Rowe on the line also waiting to talk to us about loopers. So how about just give me a quick rundown on the races, and then we'll go to Dave.
Okay. Let me just see what we've got. The races have gone really, really well. We started in Booth Bay. Booth Bay probably, they had 44 boats. The big winner was Jeremy Beal with Maria's Nightmare. We were hoping to see a couple of more gas boats come out. Randy Durkee from Islesboro, we talked about in the last segment of Boat Talk. But unfortunately, I think he can't harness the power yet. They had a BorgWarner gear in it, and unless you have a real staunch gear, the engine slips. And so they ordered a new gear, and supposedly that came in, and he raced it again at Jonesport, the last race we did, and he's still not going where she needs, because really he should be one of the fastest boats out there without question. The big winner also down there was Jeff Eaton. He does very well in diesel class L. And he raced Blue Eyed Girl, which is basically, there's three boats that are almost exactly alike. And that's Jeff Eaton's boat, Andrew Taylor's boat, which is Blue Eyed Girl, and who's the other one? There's three of them. And they all are Northern Bay 38s, and they have 815 horsepower FPT engines in them. And they both are around 48 to 51 miles an hour. Then we went from there to Rockland. Rockland was a great race. There was 45 boats there. Both of these races were up over last year. Last year, probably the downside was weather. Again, Maria's Nightmare cleaned up. If you go back into diesel class F, that was a close race in there with Faith Millay, Winfred Alley from Jonesport, or Beals actually doing winning the top spot. And then the other one that's really close in racing was in diesel class NA. We added a class in N. We split split N into A and B because of horsepower and how big some of these boats have become. And that's between Obsession, which is Ryan Lemieux from Cutler, and Dana Beal from Beals Island. And it's who gets the jump off the line as to who wins the race. And basically, they split. So that was real close racing. I mean, in Rockland, it was a matter of 2 feet between the bows. That's how close they are. Bass Harbor was great. Mother Nature tried to drown us. I know that's why Alan didn't come out and see us. he was smarter than the rest of us. There was only four of us on the barge, and I had to actually hide underneath the boom of the crane to actually try to keep the camera somewhat dry. But again, the big boat there was Maria's Nightmare didn't show. Foolish Pleasure showed up, and she raced Black Diamond, which is the one Randy Durkee runs with the big gas engine in it, alcohol. And Foolish Pleasure is also repowered, and he was doing around 50, 55. So he's doing a lot better. And he was the boat to beat in the gas classes. And the boat to beat in the diesel class was Jeff Eaton's La Bella Vita. And then from there, we went to Jonesport. And for the first time in I don't know how long, we had no fog. But we also raced it on the 29th, because if we had raced it on the 4th, we would have had fog, because I was there all for a week. But there was nothing earth-shaking down at Bass Harbor. Most of the races were...
Oh, no.
Can you still hear me?
Oh, yep. I thought we'd lost you.
Okay. For some reason, it switched from Bluetooth. So then we went to Moosebeck. We had 97 boats racing. So, you still there?
No, you're dropping out. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. I think we're all back because the Bluetooth's back.
Okay.
We went to Jonesport and we had 97 boats sign up for racing. Now, given a quarter to a third of them were pleasure skiffs. But again, there were some really good races, again, in Class F. Class E we thought was going to be tight between Randy Durkee's Audrey May, which is a Holland 32, and Bounty Hunter. But somebody came out of the woodwork and cleaned them both up, which was Calvin Beal Jr. He has a 28-footer with, I don't know, I think he's got a FPT in that or a Cummins. And anyways, he was way out in front. He beat both of them by about two boat lengths. And then the going back to diesel class NA between Obsession and Dana Beals, Natalie E, that was, again, not close this time. For some reason, Dana's boat died halfway up the course. Now, sometimes in racing, they can jam so much fuel into these engines, and being electronic, they automatically shut down. So... that may have been what happened. He ended up coming in eighth. So, but it was a great day of racing. We were done probably about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So now it's on to Stonington, and Stonington is going to have a big, big prize. They're giving away a 25-foot hull to anybody who's registered to race and races. You have to complete the race, or you have to at least be out on the course. If you break down, I'm going to count you as actually trying.
Going to need a new boat.
Yep, a new engine. So that's okay. It.
So that's good. Thank you, John. Next, we're going to go to Dave Rowe. Dave Rowe is a looper, and I guess we'll let Dave explain just exactly what a looper is. But he and his partner Stacy have officially done that, and we're going to talk about rest of the show about looping. And again, I'll remind anybody who would like to make a connection to the Boat Talk, you can use email. Just email boattalk@gmail.com, and we'll read your comment when it comes in. But first, welcome to Boat Talk, Dave and Stacy.
Oh, thank you very much.
Ahoy! Ahoy!
Good. Welcome aboard.
So we're underway as we speak. So if I have to talk to the radio, I just want to understand.
So you're on the Hudson River?
We are on the Hudson River. We are approaching what used to be the Tappan Zee Bridge, and most folks are going to continue to call it that forever. So.
So you're not looping again, are you?
No, we're coming, we're going up to Lake Champlain to spend a little time, and while we're on the lake, we're actually going to come back to Maine, and I'm going to play some shows there. I'm a musician too, as you'll recall.
Right.
So that'll be the first week in August, and then we'll come back to the boat and do some more cruising, and we may go up and do what they call the Triangle Loop, which goes up through the Heritage Canals in Canada and then comes back down through the Thousand Islands and across Lake Ontario and then back via the Erie Canal to the Hudson River. So
it's back nice into Syracuse, is it?
Something like that, yeah.
Here you go.
Oh, no, that's not him. That's the truck next to me.
Oh, okay. I thought Dave was about to leave. So, Dave, we started out the show playing our theme song, which is Eyes the Bye by Schooner Fair. And as you mentioned, you're a musician. So I'd like to thank you for, since we can't thank your dad for letting us use that music. But
of course.
You were in Scandinavia just doing a gig recently. Is that right?
We were on a cruise ship through the fjords of Norway, which was a fantastic time. I got to tell you, the fjords they live up to their they live up to the hype and then some. You can't imagine what you're seeing. Just amazing.
Was that the mailboat cruise?
Yeah, it was the mailboat cruise. Yeah.
Yeah.
Started in Casco
I've heard
Bay
about
and
that.
All the way across. Yeah. But it was absolutely some of the most stunning scenery I've ever seen. I mean, Maine is gorgeous. It really is. But those fjords, I'm telling you, mister, those were something special.
I almost feel like we're in some fjords right now on the Hudson.
Oh, the Hudson is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Big, tall cliffs and mountains.
I happen to know that some New York State geologists do consider the Hudson River to be a fjord because there are places where it's 175 feet deep, which is not what a river usually is. They say it was originally a fjord. So there you go.
There it is. So what else you got for me?
So,
why don't you tell people about the Great Loop of what it is?
Yeah, we're gonna let's start with your boat first. Did your boat or did the Great Loop idea come first?
Well, our last boat came first, and we were on Sebago Lake in Maine. We were summer boaters on a lake. We had a 32-foot carver. And
with gas and no AC and no generator.
That's right. Well, we didn't need any of that on the lake. Well, we need a lot of gas, but so we did that for a few summers, and every fall when that thing had to come out of the water, we were crying.
Uh-huh.
And so we started trying to figure out what we could do to lengthen the boating season. And I don't remember what I typed into Google, but I learned about the Great Loop. And said, well, we should just do this. And that started it moving. We started shopping for Stink Pot, which we're aboard right now. He's been good to us. And we ended up doing the Great Loop in 2019, 2020.
Okay. So let's explain the Great Loop in a little bit more detail, supposedly starting where you are now in the Hudson River and go from there.
That's a perfect place to start. So if you're in Maine, you go to New York, and then you go up the Hudson River. And when you hit the Erie Canal, you take a left. You go across the Erie Canal, and there are a couple of ways you can go from there. You can either go up the Oswego River and across Lake Ontario and through the Trans-Severn Waterway and Georgian Bay up there in Lake Huron, the North Channel, and then back down into Lake Michigan. Or you can go across the Erie Canal to its end in Buffalo, and go across Lake Erie, cut up through Lake St. Clair, and basically, you know, through the Great Lakes, get yourself to Chicago on Lake Michigan, and then it's from there. It's Western Rivers all the way to the Gulf, and then of course in the Gulf they have, well, it's the Gulf intracoastal waterway down there, which connects to the East Coast intracoastal waterway through Lake Okeechobee and whatnot. So you can just have sheltered waterways, with the exception of the Florida crossing, all the way around the Great Loop. And you come back up the East Coast, hit Chesapeake Bay, Delaware Bay, and then New York.
That's the whole thing.
It's circumnavigating these from the United States.
It is. It's approximately 6,000 miles, depending on just which way you go. Most people do it in more or less a year. How long did it take you?
We did it in the year. We were on the year program. The idea being that you just stay with summer the whole way. And by staying with summer, generally speaking, you don't have to put on your warm woolens, though we had to stick them on a couple of times.
So I happened to be doing a little research on it and discovered that 2 years ago there was a fellow who did the whole loop in 28 days.
Was he on a jet ski?
No, it was a pontoon boat, actually.
I remember hearing about that guy. Yep.
He spent $13,500 in fuel.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we took the year to do it. I mean, we wanted to see things. We wanted to go around and actually enjoy it.
Right.
And, you know, when you're at 7-8 knots, you can look around and you can see seabirds, you can see bald eagle, and you can see all sorts of things. When you're up there doing 20 knots, you're paying attention to where you're going, Mr. Man, or you're not going.
Yeah, and you're making more wake and more erosion, too.
Yep. It's hard on the waterways. It's hard on the boat. It's hard on you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you went the smart way.
I appreciate that.
So you started going up the Hudson and then out, I believe you went out the Erie Canal to all the way to Buffalo. Is that correct?
No, that was our original plan. And we got all the way to Baldwinsville, New York. And I thought to myself, because I knew what the manufacturer stated air clearance of this boat was, air draft. So I got out with the tape measure just to make sure that what was stated was what it was, and it wasn't.
Yeah, because I kept hearing that song, Low Bridge, Everybody Down, and learned there's a 15-foot bridge on the western end of the Erie Canal.
We had a choice to make. I could either remove our radar, which was in the maybe pile, or we could go with what conventional wisdom and everybody was telling us to do, which was go up through the Trent Severn Waterway and up through the North Channel, which is what we ended up doing. We turned on our heel and just ran across Lake Ontario on a whim. And I'm glad we did, because it was just some of the most gorgeous cruising I have ever done in my life.
So back to being a musician, you must have had some inspirations too.
Oh yeah, I wrote a bunch of songs. I wrote the better part of an album while we were up doing the Great Loop. I still haven't released it. I will one of these days. I'm too busy boating to record an album.
Well, I'm sure it's not a waste. You can put them out later.
That's right. Get a lot of, all the time in the world.
Yeah.
Songs aren't going anywhere.
Do you have the most recent album now? Is there some songs from that on there?
The most recent album predates the Great Loop for us. But there's still some good stuff there. I wouldn't, you know, discourage anyone from going to DaveRowMusic.com and checking out my recorded materials. One of these days, I'll get that album out.
Yeah, when we sold the house in Portland and moved aboard Stink Pot in 2021, there went the home recording studio.
It's gone. Everything changed. Yeah, we got back to Maine after doing the loop, and of course COVID was in full swing by then. And like everybody else, we hunkered down in the house, and I was staring out the window at the end of February, and there was probably, 10 or 15 feet of snow on the ground. And I just looked at Stacy, and I said, why are we here doing this? We got a boat. And that was that. House that went up for sale, and we have been out on the water ever since.
Huh. So, you have no pets on board, is that correct?
No pets. Well, I mean, unless there's a wily lizard that has been with us since Florida. I just spotted him this morning. But other than that, no. And I'm not even feeding him. I don't know how he's surviving.
Probably
spiders.
Mosquitoes. Yeah, spiders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully not cockroaches.
Yeah, we haven't seen one of those.
Yeah, they can be a hassle.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just came through the Harlem River through New York City, so somebody might have stowed away. I don't know.
So, let's keep continuing on. You've gone through the Great Lakes. You're heading down to Chicago now. And what's it like boating through a city like Chicago?
It's amazing. I mean,
so great.
It's just boating through any city. We just boated through New York City, and that was amazing. Boating through Chicago is a surreal experience because the buildings are right up to you. The skyscrapers right up to the waterway on both sides, and you just look up, and it's
gorgeous
amazing.
Architecture. Yeah,
you're going under these old bridges that Stinkpot was just barely clearing in some cases. It was probably the best 15 minutes of my life. It's over fast.
15 minutes, that's all, huh?
That was about it. And then you make the big turn, and you're headed down the Chicago River, the sanitary canal there. Huh. It's a short trip through the downtown, put it that way.
Yeah. people wave to you? Or do you see people?
Oh yeah, and you know they had tour boats going too. They run tour boats down the canals because people who visit the city want to see it, and everybody on a tour boat wants to wave to the wing nuts on the motor yachts coming down through there. So yeah. There's a lot of waving. You feel by the end of it, your arm's tired.
Yeah, but you feel good.
That's right.
So you go through Chicago. Now, how do you get from Chicago to the Mississippi River?
Well, like I said, you get on the Chicago River to the Illinois River, and, which is partially the Chicago Sanitary Canal. And then you end up on, it's the Illinois River, basically, that takes you down to the Mississippi. They come together on the name of the town. It's above Alton, the name of the town right there. It's escaping me right now. But there's a spot right there in Lamont, which is, for a lot of people, the scariest part of the Great Loop, because it's the turnaround point if your boat is too tall off the water. There's a 19-foot, 6 or 7-inch bridge there, which if you time the pools, you can get under there with a 20 and change if you're really careful. But if you're much over that, it's not the Great Loop. It's the Great Turnaround right there.
Yeah. And there's no other alternative around that spot?
Hey, you can call the boat so you can get it over the road.
It's the legendary hard stop that people almost every day online ask, how tall is that again? But, you know, people say, fill your bilge with water, fill all your tanks, you know, wait for the pool to decrease. They kind of keep track of where that is. But
yeah, there are websites you can check the pool depth too. And, you know, at certain depths, you might be able to sneak under there with 20 and a half, 20, maybe even 21 on a good day. But you're taking your chances there.
Yeah. That'd be a hard one to explain to the insurance company.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So from there, you get down to, like I said, right around Alton. That's where the Illinois comes into the Mississippi River.
And boy, was that a wild ride. The Mississippi River was pushing us like we were a speedboat.
Yeah.
It was fun. We did probably 12 knots for 200 miles or so.
Yeah, you have to keep speed up just so you can steer, don't you?
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, you have the current behind you, but on top of that, the river was running 6 knots when we were on it. So I had it hauled back. I was probably doing about 6-7 knots through the water. Plus, our hair was blowing back. We're not used to that.
No.
No.
No Huck Finns, though.
That's right.
There were a lot of logs. We even saw a whirlpool. Like, the water, just like an elevator, dropped in front of us. I looked at Dave in terror, of course, and he just steered around it. He didn't even look back at me. He was, like, as cool as a cucumber. It's good when your captain never looks worried. He's always stoic.
Never let him see you sweat.
So
from there, you do about 200 miles on the Mississippi, and then you have a big choice to make. And really, for a boat our size that holds as much fuel as we carry, the choice is easy, because doing the lower Mississippi River requires a big tank of fuel. Requires a big black water tank, or you're going to be putting it all over the side, which you're not supposed to do. There are no services on the lower Mississippi River for a long, long way, something like 900 miles.
Ooh.
So we turned left on the Ohio River in Cairo, Illinois. That took us up to Paducah, where we picked up the Tennessee River and took us down through Kentucky Lake and the Tennessee Tom Bigby Waterway all the way down to the Gulf.
All the way to Mobile. Isn't that where that comes out?
Yep.
Yeah. Huh. And that must have been pretty easy. A lot of farmland going through there, don't you?
A lot of farmland, a lot of nice land, really. A lot of places that barely see anything but boat traffic, frankly. It was a great time. I really enjoyed the inland rivers. I think Stacy probably had a slightly different opinion of them than I did, but I liked them.
Well, I enjoyed it. I just the anchorages were sometimes right next to barge traffic, and we're this tiny blip on some, 6 barge wide towboat, tiny blip on their radar with our little anchor light. You know, that was a little unsettling. But no, I also enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
Oh, good.
I thought you were less all about it than I was.
No, I think I'd be nervous like Stacy was too. I wonder.
There were some anchorages, like little tributaries to the main waterway that you could put a boat in if you had a forward and aft anchor and just kind of stick there.
Yeah,
the main river.
Getting out of the way, you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. So you come out in Mobile to the Gulf of Mexico. Is it like the intercoastal? I've never been in that area. Is it like the intercoastal with a little inside-outside thing, or is it all outside?
It feels more outside than it is, but yes, there are barrier islands there once you get outside on either side of Mobile Bay. So you tuck in behind them. It's a it's a sheltered waterway pretty much as far as you can go in either direction, at least in and around Still, Texas.
Did you go all the way around Florida, or did you take the canal?
Well, the first thing we did, believe it or not, was we went the wrong way on purpose. We wanted to visit New Orleans, and we ended up spending a month there.
Oh.
And then we turned around and came back, and we spent another 5 weeks or so in Pensacola, Florida. And then we ran around the Caravelle, where we made the crossing, as they call it. It's basically, if you want to do it right, you want to leave during daylight, and you want to arrive on the other end at daylight, because their crab pots are thick on either end. So we set out for a 24-hour journey at 6 knots. I backed the speedway off because I didn't want to arrive before daylight on the other end. So this is
a
big to-do.
Yeah. This is basically goes just east-west right through Lake Okeechobee. Is that correct?
Nope. No, we're not even there yet.
Oh.
This is taking you from Caravelle, Apalachicola area in the Panhandle down to where the western
Lake Tarpon ICW, Springs. It's the Gulf Crossing.
Yeah.
It's the Gulf Crossing. It takes you there. There is an intercoastal waterway there. On the Gulf side of Florida, but there's none in, like I said, in the dog leg of Florida.
Huh. So you're going down past Tampa Bay then?
Well, yeah, that's all part of the Gulf Intracoastal Waterway there. Uh-huh. So we came in around Tarpon Springs, and we ran all the way down to Fort Myers inside, and then we did take the Okeechobee Waterway from there to the East Coast.
Yeah, we cut off the keys.
We figure we'll get those another time. We're in this for the long haul. There's no reason to rush into these things.
Right. It's pretty water down there, but it is
shallow though.
It's very shallow. Yes, a good place for catamarans.
And we're kind of budget boaters, so it's very expensive in the Keys, and the anchorages are filled with people who live on boats to work in the area. So they're very protective of their 100 feet of radius of anchor chain, and they can be a little inhospitable from what I understand. So it was all just too much for me at the time.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
We'll get it another time.
Yeah. So then you made it all the way across Florida, you hang a left into the intercoastal, which there's a lot of speedboats there, when I was there anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's kind of crazy. You have Florida in a lot of ways is like boating in the wild. We just did the ICW through New Jersey, which runs from Cape May up to Manasquan, and it's shallow too. And everybody there runs on plane all the time. And if you do it like we just did around the 4th of July weekend, the boats are so thick, it's like swatting mosquitoes, honestly.
Huh. Yeah, and we're constrained by our draft. And a lot of these little boats on plane heading right for us don't understand that we don't have the luxury of giving them the stand-on position.
Right.
Yeah, and as Stacy's saying that, I think I should point out our draft is around 40 inches. So the ICW through New Jersey is shallow enough that I am constrained by my draft.
Ooh.
At 40 inches.
Wow.
You're not getting the Queen Mary through there.
No, no. That's pretty shallow.
Very shallow.
Yeah, a lot of the speedboats that you're seeing down in the Florida area and the intercoastal too seem to be almost all, maybe I'm just getting old, but they seem to be youngsters that are driving these things at speed.
Yep. There's a lot of young boaters. I mean, it's good. It's good to keep a lot of.
Well,
and I'm glad that Florida is one of the states that is mandating the young boaters take a boater safety course. New Jersey demands one of everybody. You have to be able to show off your card at any time. New York's starting to do that. I'm glad to see these states starting to mandate boater safety courses, but it seems that in a lot of them, it doesn't seem to matter.
We were young once. I'll tell you a quick story, though. When I was doing a delivery heading south off of Florida, probably about 10, 12 miles here out of sight of land heading south, one of those cigarette boats came tearing up to us with a couple of youngsters aboard, and they pulled up next to us, and you know what they said? Which way is Florida?
I wasn't ready for that, Alan. I had a mouthful of water.
Sorry. But yeah, a brand new boat, I guess, obviously. I don't know, maybe it was even stolen, but there was nothing on, no radio, no compass, nothing, just a speedboat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Fortunately, I pointed them in the right direction, although it was...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I hope you pointed him to West Marine to buy a radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Point them to talk with their parents first.
That's right.
So you've made it all the way up to New Jersey now. I guess New Jersey, you go off just offshore there, right? Up the coast of New Jersey.
Most people do.
Yeah.
Most people do. We have
Most
actually
have
on the
to.
Inside. Yeah, most people have to. Their draft is more than ours. We don't have to run New Jersey on the outside. And this last time that we just came through there, I wished I hadn't. It's pretty boating through there. I'll admit it. If you can just look past the speed demons and you know the boats waking you on either side constantly, but yeah. It's nice cruising. Next time we will run outside, though. I promise.
Yeah, well, you're keeping the weather, eye on the weather, and you'll probably be okay.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, running it outside, you can do it at 7-8 knots real easy in a couple of days because you can run up from Cape May to Atlantic City, which is a good all-weather inlet, in about a day. And then you can run from Atlantic City to Sandy Hook or so in about a day. And then you're pretty well in New York at that point anyway.
Ooh. That you, John?
I'm still here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you have
and
anything
wind,
you want to
I
throw
think.
In? Or you're getting wind noise again?
Well, I think you hear wind? How's that?
You're better now.
I was wondering some of the problems that you had.
Well,
problems. The boat ran dry.
Yeah, a refrigerator.
Yeah.
There are problems. Like every day, we call it adventure. You know, like your black tank will develop a crack. You know, and you have to figure that out, or you'll. Wrap a piece of floating line around your prop and you'll figure out how cold the water is as you dive under your boat.
That's right.
It's adventurous for sure.
What was the most adventurous time you had?
Oh my.
Oh, geez. You know, as far as rough things going wrong, it probably was when we lost our black water tank. We were coming across Lake Michigan, and they call Lake Michigan the washing machine. And
for good reason.
Yeah. that 35-year-old Pauling tank just didn't stand a chance against the beating we were taking in the bows. So it cracked about 4 feet long. And when you have a good long crack like that in your black water tank, it's hard to pump it out. So when I figured out what had happened, we put into a marina, and I got some what's the name of the company? Basically, it's duct tape for all intents and purposes, but a step up from it. And I went around that crack so that I could pump the old tank out. And then I took it out with an oscillating tool, and I put in a bladder system. So we went from a 30-gallon poly black water tank to a 52-gallon bladder, which was a hell of a step up, I'll have to tell you.
Do you worry about that wearing through?
Nope.
It's rated for diesel fuel.
Yeah, it's heavier than hell. I don't know if it's got an expiration date on it, but I'll tell you what, I'll have this boat sold long before we hit it, if there is one.
Yeah.
For me, the scariest part of the Great Loop was Albemarle Sound. It's just this shallow, big sound, if you will, that can...
North Carolina.
In a minute, it can look good, maybe a little foggy, and all of a sudden, you know, the waves are coming at you and your bow is almost dipping, and it was early on for me. We started our Great Loop technically from Florida, and I was white as a sheet, let me tell you. Stuff was flying out, stuff we had stowed that had never moved, that we thought was completely stowed, introduced to like flinging gravity that day. And Dave turned around, so I before I fainted.
Yeah, what had happened is we had planned to go across in the morning, and when we got up, we were fogged in hard at anchor. Hmm. And anyhow, I think that's the end of it, isn't it?
Yeah,
unfortunately, that's the music.
Well, I'll have to get that story to you another time.
All right, well, thank you very much, Dave, Stacy. I'm sure we'll be getting back to you in the future.
Thanks for having us.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
And thanks to Pep and Don in the engine room.